There. Hey, we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of Owen Explains It All. Here's a dynamic musical intro. I don't know about you guys, I really enjoy that every time.
It's a fun
piece. It has not gotten old yet.
Yeah. My name is Mike Lafferty. I'm the host of the BAMP Podcast, and I am sort of the MC of this very special edition of the BAMP Podcast, where Owen Casey Stevens comes on. It tells us how to bring some of the latest, coolest stuff from pop culture into the Starfinder world.
You can't fool us. You are the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Indeed. My secret is out. And frequent co-host, Jacob Blackman. How are you doing, Jacob?
Hello, everyone.
Hey. So today we are talking about Boba Fett, the biggest, hottest thing in sci-fi right now. Just quick check-in. You guys see the latest episode?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it very much. It cements for me a theory that I and my friend Carl and some other people have had, that the Book of Boba Fett is not designed to be an entirely standalone story, that it is effectively a spinoff and subset of The Mandalorian. So we think of it as The Mandalorian, begin parents, The Book of Boba Fett, end parents. And the most recent episode, which we're talking about the show, folks. So if you are not up to speed as of January 28th on the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, spoilers, go catch up or stop listening to us until you have. But the most recent episode very clearly shows that they are going to be using the time that stuff is happening in the Book of Boba Fett as part of the passage of time in The Mandalorian prior to the next season of The Mandalorian.
I'm keeping the language clean, you know, for the kids.
Yeah, I see that.
I'm sure one of us will ruin that eventually.
Yeah.
Almost certainly. What I find interesting is that there are a lot of people that are down on the Book of Boba Fett, and I get it. But the Book of Boba Fett is attempting to be a very different kind of story than The Mandalorian, and The Mandalorian is already doing a lot of the things that people wanted from the Boba Fett character. And I get why they might not have wanted to bolt those things onto Boba Fett. Boba Fett has not had a lot of a characterization if you're talking about non-expanded universe stuff. And this is supposed to be a story that talks about how he is becoming something different than he was. Those things all combined cause me to be happy to say, okay, I don't actually know a lot about Boba Fett, so let's learn about who he is and what he's been doing when he is at the bottom of the Sarlacc pit. But the very fact that it does some different things means that there are some opportunities to use that as a template for telling different kinds of stories in your role-playing games, and because it is what I tend to do on this show, I tend to think of it in terms of Starfinder, because that's the thing I use for sci-fi and science fantasy the most, and let's face it, Star Wars is science fantasy.
What? Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
No, it's got space wizards.
It does have space wizards.
And they mentioned the Witches of Dathomir, right? So now we have space wizards and space witches. And dragons, for that matter. Both mythosaurs, which are effectively dragons, and crate dragons, which have the word dragon right there in them. So it is very clear, I think, to anyone that reads Starfinder that Star Wars was one of our inspirations for that. It was far from the only one, because we weren't making a Star Wars role-playing game, but we absolutely did think about, okay, if you want to be someone who is like Han Solo, can you make a character in that oeuvre with this book? If you want to be someone who is like a Jedi, have we given you an opportunity to do that? And they're not one for one, but they are close enough, in my opinion, that there are things you can do with Starfinder when inspired by shows like Boba Fett. One of the things I find very, very interesting about the expansion of the Mandalorian mythology in both Mandalorian and Boba Fett is that a lot of the stuff that has been in the background, sometimes conflicting information in the background about what is Mandalorian culture, what is Mandalorian iron, what does Beskar do, why is it used or not used for various purposes, is being blended into one reasonably coherent setting Bible. And it's interesting because Star Wars has been rightfully mocked before for every planet and species having a single culture, right? All Rodians worship the god of bounty hunting. Alderaan was entirely a peaceful planet with no weapons. Ewoks are all fuzzy little guys that sing yub yub. And now with The Mandalorian, we are being shown that Mandalorian culture has, as a result of wars and different problems, been splintered and turned into different groups of Mandalorians with different opinions about what it means to be a Mandalorian. And that is interesting and reasonable and realistic and not something that Star Wars has spent a lot of time doing before. So one of the things that I think is a good takeaway is to look at, when you are looking at things like the role-playing notes for species in Starfinder, be aware that that is a baseline so that we're all talking about the same common language, right? Specifically, like Sheeran specifically note that they are all big on individuality. Well, that gives us a baseline for everyone to work around. But if you decided you wanted to play a Sheeran who finds the weight of individuality and having to make his own decisions depressing and longs for being part of a hive mind so that he doesn't have to stand out and can just go with the flow on everything, you should feel free to make that character. It's just that because we've made the statement that the norm is Sheeran do not wish to be part of a hive mind. They are proud to escape the swarm. They want to each do their own thing. That gives us the opportunity to have characters who are different from that, and everyone can understand how they're different from that. So having two different Mandalorian characters, Boba Fett and Din Djarin, approach things differently and come from different ethnic backgrounds and different sects and different beliefs of what it is to be a Mandalorian, and yet both have a very serious connection to that armor, is, I think, a good example of how you can have, like, you can take two soldiers in Starfinder. You can even take two soldiers who have both decided to take the Armor Storm fighting style in Starfinder and put them on the same group and have them otherwise be very different. You know, one of them can focus on melee weapons, the other on ranged weapons. One of them can focus on flamethrowers and grenades. The other can train in a spear or a lightsaber. Those are ways that you can have very similar characters not overlap so much that they don't have any room for individual expression. And I think that's an important part of what is going on with these stories. Jacob, jump in here for a sec. Give me an opinion.
I was pretty happy with them doing a nice switch over to the Mandalorian. It was good to see the character again. Not that I haven't been enjoying the Boba Fett story, because we need to see the different perspectives of characters. You know, all we ever hear about is that the Mandalorians are the biggest badasses ever. And we never really got to see that especially with Boba Fett in the movies. Cause you know, all we see is he's the guy who chases Han and captures him eventually. And otherwise he gets smacked into a Sarlacc pit. And that's really all we get. So it's nice to see Boba Fett back and doing Boba Fett things. But at the same time, we got to see the badass Mandalorian story already with Din Djarin. So the fact that Boba Fett is doing something entirely different and trying to make something new of his life and trying to approach things in a different way other than blast them all in the face is kind of nice. He you know, you have to think of it from his perspective. Here he is in the bowels of a Sarlacc. I've been doing things one way. I've been shooting people in the face, disintegrating them, you know, obviously, my whole life. Pretty much since my dad died. Yeah. Where has this gotten me? I'm being slowly digested by a Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Maybe I should do something different with my life if I get myself out of this. Maybe. And then he has this opportunity where he meets people who are, instead of being all about do things for yourself and work for yourself and only survive for yourself, like he's been told to by all the other bounty hunters who have been living in his life, because we saw how he was raised during the Clone Wars by the worst bounty hunters. Suddenly he has a community. Suddenly he's all about people who live for each other. And he's like, I like this. This is how it should be. And I think I should bring this way of life to others.
And he specifically says you can only get so far without a tribe.
Exactly. Right.
So he is very clearly at a point where he does not want to be Boba Fett is looking out only for Boba Fett. He wants to create a community of trust and loyalty. And we see that when he decides to spare the two Gamorrean guards who would not betray Fortuna, and he tells them, you did not turn when things were obviously against you. That war is over. He lost. I will now give you the opportunity to work for me. He's done the same thing with the mods and their little Power Ranger scooter bikes, right? There's no work, Great Damiel. Okay, then you work for me now. And these are very different kinds of stories that we have been getting with The Mandalorian, or that one has traditionally done about Boba Fett, because Boba Fett was always a solo character, and throughout the expanded universe, you know, he might well work with someone for a specific mission or be part of a bounty hunter's guild, but he was very much a operate on his own solo character. And this is a interesting, in my opinion, way to expand what kind of stories you can tell with him. And I think there are some opportunities for some cool things that you could do in a Starfinder game. I can't help but think that this is what it looks like when someone in a D20 game takes the leadership feat, right? Yeah. Boba Fett effectively has one cohort. He has a assassin that's as good as him in many respects and better than him in others. And then he's got a bunch of people that, you know, all four of the mods or five or whoever were not a match for the single Wookiee gladiator, but they could help. They could slow it down. They are clearly followers rather than a cohort. The Gamorrean guards were helpful in a limited circumstance. He's looking at getting a small army together, and that's going to be an opportunity for that. Now, I've actually already written up a version of leadership for Starfinder. It's already on my blog. You can look at it, because I wrote up a version of every feat from the Pathfinder core rulebook that wasn't already in Starfinder as a design test. And at some point, I'll compile them all and put them in the second Starfarer's Companion. But I also think that there is a place to do a sort of simplified set of cohort rules where you can say, hey, you've got some cohorts. They can do the following things. They can do covering fire. They can do harassing fire. They can give you a flanking bonus. And not make either the player or the GM keep track of every single follower and backup and Imperial Guard you've got, and just say, you've got a certain number of bonuses you can apply based on how high level you are. So you can say, hey, I've got maybe in between recuperating, you have five follower tokens. And you can just say, I'm going to use this one for harassing fire this round. I'm going to use this one for a flanking bonus this round. And you just expend them. And then also a NPC can get rid of your follower tokens by spending an action to shoot one of your followers, who doesn't die. You just need to get them to your back to tank. Yeah. It allows for a simplified, compressed version of the complexity of having, you know, I've got eight second level characters and we're all seventh and they can just barely help and they're all going to die and we got to keep track of where they all are. I think you can watch the Book of Boba Fett and see how they are effectively a living, breathing piece of equipment, right? They can do this much and not a whole lot more. And I plan to go into greater length of that on a Owen Explains It All blog post Monday. And I've also, because of the most recent episode, been thinking about how do I put a NOS injector in a starship. Because, of course, they did the N1 Naboo starfighter, and it had a special button you could push to go really stupid fast. And I suspect it can go really stupid fast briefly, and after that, will damage the engine if you keep it pressed. So that's a neat idea. One of the things that some people don't like about Starfinder is that the economy for starships is entirely divorced for the economy from regular equipment. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that doesn't make sense. How does that work? How does that look in a story? Well, if we watch The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, no one has acquired a starship by buying it pretty much in this whole series. I mean, yes, Mando throws a bag of credits at his friend because she's working on his N1, but that doesn't actually get him the starship, and she's perfectly willing to give it back. And in fact, what they have to do is they have to make some skill checks to talk to the Jawas and end up getting some special equipment. They have to make skill checks to put things together. They have to make decisions on, hey, how fast do you want this to go? Do you want a droid port, or do you want a place that you can maybe put a size small cohort if you happen to have one coming up in the next season? Boba Fett got his fire spray back, not by shelling out money for it, but through an adventure where he said, hey, you had a starship. It's now stuck in this gangster's hangar. You can go get it, and that's an adventure. All of the and Mandalorian just showed up with the Razor Crest to start with no explanation of where did he buy it, how much did it cost, et cetera, et cetera. So narratively, these are all ways that you can say we have the starship economy. If we're going to use starships in our Starfinder game, how do you start? Right? Okay, I steal a starship, or my starship is on loan, or I run the starship for a conglomerate as long as I, you know, run a mission for them now and then. And it can become a tool that the GM can use to get people from adventure to adventure without having to deal with the complication of, hey, you spent too much money on your starship. Now you don't have the right amount of equipment for a personal scale battle, or you decided not to have a starship. So why the GM obviously can't throw starship conflict at you. And instead you spent all those credits on five levels higher equipment. That is exactly why those two economies are divorced. But the fact that they are divorced in the game doesn't mean that starships can't be bought for credits. It means that the game assumes for game purposes that we will be getting a hold of our starships some other way. And if you lose them, you will get some benefit other than just more money. You can't just pirate a ship, steal it, sell it, and get, you know, a million credits because you've effectively stolen a luxury yacht. And that is actually much closer to how Star Wars handles starships in general than any kind of economy. You know, yes, we are told that you could almost buy your own starship for the credits that Luke is going to get for selling his speeder, which makes you wonder if you can sell a used speeder and that almost gives you enough money to buy your own hyperspace capable starship. Either Luke has no idea how much starships cost, or there is a really weird economy between starships and speeders. But you know, when Han Solo gets his the Millennium Falcon, we know he got that in a game of chance. When he gives it back to Lando for a specific mission, Lando isn't shelling out money for it. Basically, in Star Wars, if the plot calls for you to have access to a starship, there's some starship available, and it may or may not be something that the characters hold on to and carry with them wherever they go. Jared Rock says, say FFOD Galactic Trade.
No, that's one thing I really like about a lot of the modern science fiction games, Starfinder, the Fantasy Flight games, Star Wars. They assume you get a ship, because otherwise, what is the point of being in a game where you go travel to other planets if you can't travel to other planets? You know, you shouldn't be spending your credits on your ship. You should have a ship because that's part of the game. Now, is it a good ship?
Hopefully it'll get better as you go along.
Exactly. Hopefully it gets better as you go along. It should be a ship that is large enough to accommodate your party.
Yeah.
That is the minimum parameters.
Necessarily comfortably, right? I mean, if you're told, okay, you can all be here, but two of you are sleeping next to the hologest table at the lounge, which is the size of a large bathroom, because that's all the space we have, or two of you are going to be sleeping in the medical beds in the med bay, and we just hope that, and if someone gets shot and it's not you, you'll have to swap out with them. Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, this is only one paradigm for how people might get starships, right? If you were looking at, say, Star Trek, those people mostly end up with starships, again, not as purchases for their private use. But some characters clearly have. On Discovery, there's a character that owns his own starship. We haven't talked about how we get to it. There are shuttles and transports. There are assigned military starships, which, depending on your military, you may have more or less actual authority to do anything with it.
Yeah.
So I think there are lots of opportunities to set up a situation where we don't necessarily expect you to keep track of a separate set of credits. And if what you want is to do a Firefly style, I've gone down a rabbit hole a little away from Boba Fett here, but if what you want to do is hey, we have to make enough money to keep our ship going plot line, all you need is for the GM to say, okay, you all have expenses. You've got needs. You have to get fuel. I don't want you all to effectively have to do your taxes or run a small business to play this game. So I'm just telling you, you need to now take this mission. That's what's available that'll pay enough. Then we have the adventure. Then I say, hey, 3 months passed, during which time you've managed to keep the ship going. Okay, now you have to do this adventure. And you just don't worry about every little dime or space credit or starship value shit that you're putting into the starship end of things, because mostly we are here to play a game.
It's like the encumbrance rules. It might not add anything to your fun. Might not actually emulate a genre. So I don't remember Conan or Farfred stopping to say, how are we going to carry all this stuff?
Well, no, but you do see that you know, Conan has different levels of armoring he gets into depending on the situation, right? If you look at Lord of the Rings, Gimli puts on heavier armor for the siege of Helm's Deep because he doesn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
In fact, most of them put on heavier armor for that one thing. And so that emulates that. It's funny you mentioned the encumbrance rules. When we were using the... Yeah, encumbrance is sort of a big deal in Starfinder because we simplified the encumbrance rules so much that people actually used them. And at one point...
I'm a fan of the bulk system.
At one point, we had some people in the company say, you can't use the simplified encumbrance system. And when we asked why, the response was, because it's so simple, GMs will actually use it. So that was to them a bad thing, that the encumbrance was so easy to use that it would actually get applied, and they didn't like encumbrance in games. Now, we carefully went through some builds, right, to say, hey, if you've got a 10 strength or you've got an 8 strength, what are your options for how much encumbrance you can carry? And it is not difficult to get away with, okay, I've got a light suit of armor that's light or one. I've got a light small arm that's a light. I can get up to 10 of them. I get one or two pieces of equipment. And unlike Pathfinder and D&D, money doesn't weigh anything. So you can just be considered to have it on your cred chit, which is a real savings in bulk. But you know, we saw in The Mandalorian that he was able to add the spear and add the lightsaber, but those weren't both permanent additions. He ended up giving the spear away, which is another interesting example of, you know, he sort of looted this stuff, right? That was sort of as close to D&D looting as these stories tend to get. Defeated someone, got their spear, and the Jedi said, no, you keep it. Defeated someone, got their cool lightsaber, which we also got to watch him have to train to have weapon proficiency because he was clearly not proficient with the exotic weapon that was lightsaber. And that might even be a weapon.
Himself with it.
Yeah, that might even be a weapon where you say, hey, if you are not proficient with a lightsaber and you roll a one on your attack roll, not only do you miss, you hit yourself.
That I like the initial fight scene, and I talked to some people who didn't. I was like, well, you can. I mean, they're kind of demonstrating, right? He's not a swordsman; he's a gunslinger. But yeah. It's. I don't think ever in Star Wars you've seen somebody do a critical fumble on camera. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, it speaks to the fact that a lightsaber in general and the darksaber in particular is not an easy weapon to use. We know you can turn them on because Han Solo used one to cut open a Tauntaun because he had to keep his friend lukewarm. But,
he wasn't swinging it around. He was just carefully cutting something.
Exactly. It's a lot like a chainsaw. It's not hard. I have, with no training, used a chainsaw to cut a limb in half. But if I had a chainsaw and I was trying to fight with it and I bumped it, there's a good chance I'll bloody myself with it. So I think it's perfectly reasonable for the Mandalorian to have chosen to fight with it. It's a legendary weapon of his people. It's famous. He earned it in battle. And until you roll that one and end up burning your own leg, you don't necessarily realize what the risks are. So, but that is another thing that will be in my article, is talking about, if you wanted to, how to do things like critical fumbles only for special kinds of weapons. Oh, Jared Rock says, aren't lightsaber crystals attuned to the owner? So in the expanded universe, there's some discussion of that, but keep in mind, for example, that the very first lightsaber that Luke got was his father's. So, and he had no trouble learning how to use it. But again, he had not a lot, but he had lightsaber training from a Jedi to teach him how to use it. And Luke never fought with it in Star Wars. He got it and never attacked anyone with it. We did not see him use it against people until Empire. And by that time, he'd obviously gained levels because he'd picked up telekinesis. So there are a lot of things in Star Wars in general, and The Mandalorian and Boba Fett in particular, you can use as touchstones for how to build on the class level proficiency progress of a D20 RPG.
Hey, Owen, quick question.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for full stat blocks, but just, you know, in our last 90 seconds, if you were going to stat up the Mandalorian and or Boba Fett in a Starfinder game, what classes would you pick?
So I would absolutely make the Mandalorian a soldier. I think he is clearly a soldier with some gunslinging fighting style. He is very much a fight it kind of character. I would probably give him the bounty hunter theme because he does a lot of bounty hunting. Boba Fett, on the other hand, I would be inclined to write up as an operative who is more likely to apply trick attack and has more skills, but is not in a toe-to-toe stand-up fight as directly dangerous, but still with the bounty hunter theme. Both of them might multi-class some. I could easily see, you know, Boba Fett taking one or two levels of soldier and the Mandalorian taking one or two levels of operative, just for all the skill points that'll get you. But in general, yeah, operative gadgeteer is a possibility. There are some good themes. There are some good archetypes, all of which you could apply. But I definitely think you want to look at where does the armor come from? How does that apply? What do you end up doing with that? There's some lovely soldier things that allow you to modify your armor. There's also like a career soldier theme that has some neat stuff in it. So I would be playing with those to try and go for that kind of feel.
Sounds good. And hey,
weirdly, arguably the Mandalorian makes a better operative because he fights with small arms, and trick attack would work better with that, whereas Boba Fett tends to be using big two-handed weapons and rifles. So I'd have to think about it. I might end up having to either swap them out or play with multi-classing.
All right. Well, cool. Maybe something to talk about more in the future. No pressure, though. And that is our 30 minutes.
There we go.
So, any closing thoughts, guys?
Stunt and strike operative, maybe. I like the show, and I personally think that a lot of the objections I see to Boba Fett will have been addressed by the time all the episodes are out. If not, I always remember that the logic of Star Wars is pretty wimbly-wombly to begin with, right? We're told that a weapon that can blow up planets can't fire because there's a planet in the way of its target. Obviously, if it blows up planets, and we're not told in the movie that there's any limitation to how fast or often I can do it, it could just fire twice. They don't do that because it's cool and it doesn't affect the story. So anytime someone says, well, why X, why Z? Well, because that's the story that they want to tell. And you just have to assume that even if they don't tell you, there are reasons that cause it to make sense.
Indeed. Jacob, closing thoughts? Or are we out of here?
If you enjoy content like this, please support the BAM Podcast Patreon.
I need to revamp Patreon so bad. But yes, thank you for promoting. If you go to the Patreon, search for BAM Podcast, it's just us. We're the only ones with that name. So,
really? I would have thought there were dozens of BAM podcasts.
There's probably one guy doing MMA commentary. But,
there you go.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Owen Explains It All.